versus Stevens. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Catherine Putnam appearing on behalf of the appellant, Jennifer Stevens, now known as Jennifer Stone. We believe that this is a case where the trial court failed to do an adequate analysis on the best interest of the minor child, which would be consistent with both the Parenting Act of the state of Nebraska and to bring this case in line with the subsequent jurisprudence that has come out on the best interest of the child since this decree was issued in 2015. There are two significant errors that we think were made. First, that the court failed to consider whether or not the parenting plan that was in place, that they kept in place, was sufficient under the Parenting Act, which holds that two fit parents should have significant contact and meaningful contact with the minor child if they are fit. There's no question in this case both parents are fit parents, and we pled to the court that the current parenting plan is simply insufficient. It's an inadequate amount of time for a fit parent, and then it also deprives the child of having the meaningful, regular parenting relationship to which they are entitled. The court has extrapolated on, I think, that concept in recent years, first with the Thompson case, which says quality contact requires significant amounts of time. Learners goes a little bit farther, saying that they need to enjoy the benefit of these parental relationships to the maximum extent possible. And then Jeffrey T., which says that the child has a right to enjoy these relationships to the maximum amount possible. Here we have a parent who's ready, willing, and able to have additional parenting time. We believe the court found that she did establish a material change since the decree was entered.
Do you, I mean, there's a little bit of language that the judge uses here, right? But not by much language of material change. Is that a problem?
That's a great question, Your Honor, and me and Mr. Higgins have spoken about this. Reading this in I think, the most generous way, you would say it's a little bit, well, even if she did this and it's just by a little bit, she does satisfy the first prong, but we didn't get past the second one, so let's move on.
To change custody would be in the best interest.
Correct. And so that's how I interpret it. I think it's a reasonable reading of just the entire order itself. But again, I did brief the issue of the material change just in case you guys had a problem with my interpretation of it, which I think would also be fair. So I do think the court failed to look at whether or not this plan was sufficient, whether it was an unreasonably low amount of time for a perfectly fit parent, and whether or not this conformed with the Parenting Act.
And so you're referring to the memorandum of understanding, the parenting time that was already in play for years, right, by the time you came to this trial, a modification that the alternating weekend and the one night a week, your argument is that was insufficient and you put on sufficient evidence to establish that.
Correct, Your Honor. One of the biggest issues that my client testified to is because of the minimal amount of overnight. She has four overnights a week. She's never even so much as been able to take this child to school. This child is now 11 years old. The parenting time does not provide for a normal parenting relationship that has the benefits of the parental relationship. She doesn't have school nighttime, but for a little dinner visit. She has two overnights now. Most of the weekends are spent with activities. There's just no time for this child to settle in.
But it's certainly understandable how your client would want more time, but what evidence was there that having that additional time would have been in the child's best interest?
Her testimony that the child has a significant adjustment period when coming back into the home, I thought was very compelling. The child is away for so long that she never really quite settles in on weekend time. My client feels as though the bonds that would be established with more time, things like doing a bedtime routine, doing homework with your child, the fundamental pieces of what make parenting, she's not able to do just because of the absence of time.
But even if we agreed with you, Ms. Putnam, that perhaps this mother should have more time, our abuse of discretion standard of review is very limiting in terms of what we can do here. How would you justify, and I know you did that to some degree in your brief, but here now, how would you justify that what the court did here was an abuse of discretion?
I think that piggybacks on to the cumulative pieces that are present here. The court entirely ignored Mr. Stevens' conduct in looking at what the best interest of the child is. There's two cases that came out in 2021 that I think hit this right on the head, where you have a primary custodial parent who conducts themselves in a way that puts barriers in between the parental relationship with the non-custodial parent and the minor child. They're inflexible, they're uncooperative, they shut the parent out, they refuse to acknowledge their legal custodial rights, they don't give notice about anything, they don't communicate. When you have that, the court has held that does not serve the child's best interest. So the counterweight of that is that a parent that is able to do those things likely does serve the child's best interest. Here we have two components. We have both the lack of time and then the custodial parent conducting themselves in a way that is not becoming of a custodial parent. It is not what the court expects from them, and it's a further impediment. And so I think when you have those two factors combined, I do think you can extrapolate from that the best interest of the child is not being served. They don't have significant amount of time with a non-custodial parent. The time's inadequate to build the kind of relationship the child's entitled to under the Parenting Act. And then secondly, because
those are all things that your client agreed to.
Agreed, but the fact is that the circumstances under which she agreed to these things have changed. My client was brave enough to say, I'm not able to do this right now, 7 years ago, and that she put the primary custody with her husband, believing that they would work together, they'd cooperate, and when she was able to do more, she would be able to do more. The opposite of that has been the case. He's not only failed to cooperate in any respect to the parenting time, he's never honored her right of first refusal, he's never given her an extra day of parenting time ever, and he's manipulated the ambiguities in the plan so that every time there's a dispute, somehow her time is the time that's lost. He has a lot of control under this plan. I think my client naively and unrepresented believed that he wouldn't yield that power in the way that he has, but I think it's very clear that he has interfered with the purpose of this plan at every step of the way, and that it's not serving anyone's interest. And this is not even to get to the high level of conflict that this plan has also caused.
Yeah, so if we were in a position where we could just reweigh this evidence, I mean, I completely agree with you that the evidence in this record suggests there was a lot of improper, you know, non-cooperative behavior by this dad. But we have to assume that the trial judge took that into consideration, and unless we can conclude it was an abuse to not put more weight, for example, on dad's behavior, because there was some very disturbing behavior, in my opinion. Did it rise to the level of an abuse of discretion for the trial court not to weigh that more heavily, than some of the other evidence that was presented?
By the order in front of you, I don't think there's any evidence that the court weighed it at all. So the thing that the court said is she wasn't able to say why 50-50 would be better. That's just simply not true. She established that there's the lack of time creates the adjustment period, that she just doesn't have enough time with all the activities, that all of these bonding moments and the significant time is being eaten away. Then his conduct on top of this, there's piles of evidence of all of these best interest issues that aren't addressed at all by the court. I do think it was an abuse of discretion to simply say, well, she gets good grades and she has lots of friends and she behaves well, but ignore all of the things that serve as the fundamental purpose of the Parenting Act, which is to ensure significant quality contact between parents and children so long as parents are fit. And here we have that. And father's conduct coupled with the insufficient time has created a situation that I don't think conforms with the law and that should have been considered by the court. And there's nothing in the record that indicates that it was. So I think the failure to consider and weigh any of this evidence and just to say the evidence didn't exist at all, that I think is an abuse of discretion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Judge Moore, Judge Bishop, Judge Arterburn, counsel, may it please the court. I'm Matthew Higgins and I represent Mr. Christopher Stevens. I would like to begin what I have to say to the court based upon what Judge Bishop asked right off. I disagree with Ms. Putnam, that was our discussion earlier, but I don't think there's any ambiguity in the judge's finding about a material change of circumstance. And I'll read that directly from here. It's very short. He says, "All things considered, as they must, even if Jennifer was able to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that there was a material change in circumstance since the time of the decree and affecting the best interest of Emerson, she would have passed the first step." But then it goes on to add, "not unproblematically, but not by much." I don't think that means anything. It's ambiguous if I read it through a very dark glass.
I mean, if the court was going to find there had been no material change at all, shouldn't it have stopped there?
My college English professors would agree with you. Judge Atepka, I think, and many other judges sometimes, whether it's appropriate or not, will add language maybe to make both sides feel better or make them feel that perhaps there's more to this. I don't know why he wrote that, but when he says...
But I mean, why go on to consider whether a change in custody is in the best interest of the child if the court's concluding there's no material change in circumstances affecting the best interest of the child? If the court's concluding that, why go to the second step?
I think he was anticipating today. That's what I think he was doing. I think he thought, well, what if the Court of Appeals disagrees with me on the material change in circumstance? I'd better go ahead and address the best interest argument. That's, again, I'm trying to define what Judge Atepka was thinking. That I think is a reasonable interpretation.
Either way, it comes down to whether a change in custody is in the child's best interest or a change in the parenting plan is in the child's best interest.
Yes, that can, if you taken literally and absolutely, it can eat up every other standard and every other condition that's been promoted by the court.
Did you cross-appeal the issue?
I did not cross-appeal the issue. I thought it was fairly straightforward, and I can use some of the same words that Ms. Stevens used when, again, might consider it a little bit narrow to ask, well, in what way would this child's life be improved by doing what you want? The answers generally tended towards, well, I would be more bonded with her, or I would have more time with her, or she would have more time with me, or her husband said she could go to church with us. And then finally, Ms. Stone said, when I questioned her, she said about the condition of her daughter's life, that it was ideal. But I don't think we have to parse grammar there.
But didn't she also discuss the adjustment issues with the short amount of time?
She did. But that was the end of it. I mean, is it an adjustment issue because she's missing her father? Is it an adjustment issue because she is irritated by...
Well, father's calling even when mother's exercising her very limited parenting time, isn't he?
He is. He
claims the daughter requested that.
Yes, and the record reflects that it's not necessarily him making these calls. It's his daughter wanting to speak with him. And what Judge Arterburn said earlier about, well, didn't she agree to this? Well, what happens if you agree to a parenting plan that gives you 4 or 5 days a month? What would one expect? I mean, the child's going to be bonded more closely and trust the parent in a way that they wouldn't trust and confide in the other parent. Now, in an ideal world, you'd want them to be equal. But at the time the decree was entered and the parenting plan was entered, and by the way, that memo, I'd like to address that in a minute. When it was entered, and I sounded a bit robotic in my brief, 30-some pages, I still get to say terse, but it was. At the time of the divorce decree, she had a certain species of mental illness was being treated for all of them, and she was taking medication for them. Over the entire course of the next 5, 6, 7 years, it's the same thing. Now, didn't want to admit it, but when we subpoenaed the medical records of the pharmacy and her doctors, we saw, you know, within 4 days of the filing of their complaint, she no longer was going to the doctor. So right up until the filing, she still was seeing a physician for the very same issues she had at the time. And as far as financial stability goes, she was unemployed then. She was employed for a period, very short. She's unemployed at the time of trial. And so where it mattered, there were no changes. Now, this idea about Mr. Stevens misbehaving, and I can understand why Your Honor gets that impression. But I have a couple of arguments that I promise are not thinly slicing or sophistry. In almost all of the divorce decrees that I've had the privilege of either writing or reading over the last 30 years, there's a specific provision about disclosing medical appointments. It's in all of them. This one doesn't have it. And when Mr. Stevens was questioned, the question was, why isn't that in there? And he gave a very reasonable response. She's completely disruptive at the appointments, and in the one time he did go ahead and do it, despite what the decree said, it was a mess. Now, does that, you know, you might want to think he should be more fair-minded about that. But I'm not there to judge what happens to the doctor's office. All we heard was it was disruptive, and it was a provision that was negotiated.
But he could share information. He chose not to even share information.
Well, that was disputed. That he didn't tell her in advance of the appointment was not disputed. I agree. But didn't share it with her. She said one thing. He said the other. Now, when it comes to the other disclosures, for example, school and such, they have joint legal custody. Right? If she could make appointments if she thought medical care was needed. She could go to the school and ask all sorts of questions like Mr. Stevens did. I mean, and, you know, looking at it one way, you know, I suppose, though she didn't say it, the tone of voice would be, he's manipulating the child. What kind of parent has complete control over their children? A good one. Right? So it depends on how we want to look at how bonded she is to her father.
Was there any evidence of what he does to encourage the relationship between this child and her mother?
No, there was no evidence of him attempting to encourage or discourage. The one thing that came up during trial that appears, if you just look at it black and white without reading within the context, is supposedly he would let Emmy know, right, that there is some event she might miss. Well, he gave the perfectly reasonable explanation. He has two other little girls living in his home, and they've got calendars for all the activities for the kids and the adults. Now, wouldn't it be strange for these little girls to know there's a secret calendar? But how do you handle this? It's like every other home. They got it on the fridge. Here's when the baseball games are. Here's when the social events are.
Well, you handle it by telling your daughter that it's more important for her to spend some time with her mom, maybe, than to go to one of her sister's events. I'm just suggesting that there's an appearance in this record that your client has not been very generous at all in trying to encourage the relationship, and there does not seem to be any evidence to suggest that that would be not to an advantage for this child. So did the judge weigh that at all? What evidence is there that the judge actually weighed the fact that there's, I won't say it's alienation kind of behavior, because it's not that strong from this record, but maybe borderline. So did the judge weigh that at all in considering trying to give this mother more time?
Well, it's not clear from the opinion. But other than, again, I write not unproblematically about this memorandum, he did what he was supposed to do. You know, and one of the things that I've noticed when I read the appeals cases and the Supreme Court cases, I mean, perfectly reasonable for us to say, well, he should have given extra time, or he should have gone this extra step. Nothing that happens in the district court courtroom advises any of the people that get custody or visitation or get anything, however it's negotiated or it's found at trial, that, okay, here's what you got to do. Make sure you give extra time when she asks. Make sure you do all these other things. Usually what they say is follow the court order. You got to follow the court order, and that's what Mr. Stevens did. And I suppose I could see what you see. It could be a sneer, right? I'm following the court order.
Exactly.
Mr. Higgins, let me move to a little different topic.
Yes, sir.
Is there the court's order basically sent him back to the parenting time schedule that they had under the decree?
Yes, sir.
Now, I don't know if they're following that or if they're sticking with what with the
memo
of understanding.
Yeah.
But isn't, at least with respect to the actual parenting time, is there not at least a material change of circumstance there that they've now been following this alternative schedule for 3 or 4 years by the time the trial comes up, and frankly, their daughter seems to like that, and is that at least not a material change on that narrow issue?
On that narrow issue, again, I'm caught off guard here because it's not in the record, but it wasn't asked for in the alternative. No one asked.
There was a request for additional time. The mother asked if she couldn't get joint custody, she would like more time, and under that plan, she does get at least a little bit more time than she did under the original decree.
I agree, and one of the reasons this didn't come up between Ms. Putnam and myself or even the court is they're just sticking to that plan, the memorandum plan. In other words, even though Judge Itepka said you don't have a change of circumstance, they're exercising that plan. I know it's not in the evidence, but they just returned to their ways.
So there'd be no harm in modifying the decree or the order accordingly?
Judge Moore, no. Insofar as it's consistent with their agreement in the memorandum, certainly not. Certainly not. We if that was proposed, we never would have resisted it. And I know I'm out of time, but may I just, if you have any other questions, I'd like to answer them.
Thank you, I think we're good. Thank you very much, Mr. Higgins. How much time did we take Mr. Higgins over?
1 minute and 20 seconds.
Can you please add that to Ms. Putnam's rebuttal time?
The MOU gives a restructuring of the time and maybe a couple hours here or there. It doesn't solve the fundamental problems to which Ms. Stone brought this before the court. I think the MOU smoothed over some of the exchanges. They were exchanging so frequently that and the conflict in this case was not allowing for any kind of smooth transition. So I do think it solved a very small problem, but also exacerbated some larger problems because now the distance between visits is a lot greater than it was when she only had the Saturday overnight. It's still 4 overnights a month. She still never gets to take her child to school or put her to bed on a school night or do homework.
She still has every Wednesday.
Right? She does. It's a dinner visit. It's often, cut short with activities and things like that. So, as the child gets older, I feel like the dinner visit gets a little bit smaller. I believe it ends at 7 or 7:30. So when the child has after-school activities or things of that nature, a dinner visit becomes an hour or 2 hours here and there.
And apparently there's not a lot of flexibility for changing that evening in the event there's an issue.
They've done it in the past. Whether they'll continue to do it in the future, I have some concerns that Mr. Stevens may be a bit emboldened by the outcome of this case. I don't think he has any incentive to do that. As Mr. Higgins said, he doesn't have to. So I think that's probably where we're going to end up, and I don't have a lot of confidence that that flexibility is going to be shown going forward.
Thank you.
Anything? Anything?
Thank you very much. All right, the matter is submitted. Thank you both very much for your arguments today.